All right, while our panel members come up, we'll grab any questions that you guys have. All right. Thank you, members, for joining us. Dr. Fitzgibbons, our first question we have is that they've had insurance companies, for example, Humana, that will deny or ding surgeons for performing cholangiograms without a clinically documented reasons. What would you think to this?
Well, I guess I'd have to go along with that. I certainly don't believe in that philosophy, and I've not had that problem happen. No insurance company has ever dictated to me how I specifically do my operations. I think that's very dangerous. I mean, what if the anatomy's not clear? What happens then? What if the surgeons can't understand the anatomy? I mean, is that a good reason? Is that a good enough reason, I wonder? Because you could say that every time. You weren't sure of the anatomy. But I think that's a very dangerous maneuver on the part of an insurance company.
Yeah, I think it'd probably come down to is just make sure you document something that's worth it. Why are you doing the procedure then?
I didn't understand.
I think it comes down to then just documenting why you did it.
Yeah.
So. Dr. Boomstone, what is your preferred method of measuring stroke volume variation, or PVI, in the OR, in the ICU?
Great question. Number one, the utility of dynamic indices in the intensive care unit is less than other indices like a delta stroke volume measure, in large part because of the requirement for controlled mechanical ventilation in patients with regular RR intervals. Probably about 30% or more of intensive care unit patients do not have regular RR intervals, and a percentage far greater than that are not ventilated in a controlled fashion. So in the intensive care unit, the use of dynamic indices, only a rare patient, I think, will qualify. Relative to the methodology, it doesn't really matter which technology one chooses. Pulse pressure variation has been around a long time, and Philips monitors, many Philips monitors, have software integrated that will provide you a PPV measure. Stroke volume variation can be obtained from a host of different technologies, pulse contour analysis through LIDCO or PICO or Edwards products. Pleth variability index, PVI, which is obtained only off of a Masimo device, suffers only from the limitations of measuring swings and changes in small digital arteries, which if you've got a cold patient or a shock patient, PVI is not exactly, it doesn't turn out to be that good. But I hope that answers the question.
Well, Dr. Sisley, do you have any thoughts on that from the surgical critical care standpoint?
I concur with your statement that many patients in the ICU wouldn't qualify for dynamic monitoring because of the need to have no arrhythmia as a regular RR interval. SVV is very commonly used off the Vigileo in those patients, but as I mentioned in my ultrasound talk, Vigileo is not considered to be particularly accurate in patients who are obese, patients who have arrhythmias, and that includes a fair number of our patients. So, and you have to be ventilated. So it's a very small percentage, I think, of our patients. And in intensive care unit, as I mentioned on Thursday, I think the best bet is to do cardiac ultrasound and get a look at the cardiac output that way.
Okay. Dr. Sisley. How would you compare and contrast states with regulated trauma systems such as Maryland, Virginia, Colorado versus states such as Arizona that don't have a regulated system?
Oh, there's a political football since I live here now. First of all, you got to define what you mean by not regulated. You know, there's state regulation and then there's national regulation, and Arizona does actually have state verification as well as national verification for trauma centers. So you can have the American College of Surgeons, which is the national verification. I think that each state is so different, particularly when you think about population centers and how much rural area there is, that comparing, say, New York with Wyoming doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you're talking about how to develop an appropriate trauma system. And so I actually personally believe it's best left up to the states so that they can customize the system. As long as there is some kind of system that is regulated, I think it's best left in the hands of the states.
Okay. Dr. Bloomstone, this question is about preoperative screening. The question is it true that all we now need is the NISQIP risk calculator for pre-op testing?
Well, let me just say that relative to pre-op testing, I want to be very clear that when we are talking about routine testing, what this means is is obtaining tests just out of routine. You know, my surgical patients get a CBC and an SMA7. That is routine testing. I will also say, in my opinion, per protocol testing, my 50-year-old patients get this and this and this is also a subset of routine testing. Testing should be applied when there is an answer where there's a question that you want answered, and that answer will alter your management. If those two conditions are not met, a test should not be obtained. Was there another question? Oh, just the risk calculator. The fact of the matter is the risk calculators need to get better and better and better and better. We don't stop just because we've developed one. We never stop, and we combine all of the factors that are required to give a patient the appropriate information to make a decision about should they have surgery or should they have a medical option. And if they have multiple surgical options, which one is best? And that informs them and it informs you. And it also informs us, and it speaks to the appropriate disposition. And that's what we should use as many predictors as we possibly can that are validated. I personally believe we should bring CPET testing here for our moderate and high-risk surgical patients. There are lots of patients who you think are ASA 2, ASA 1, and you get them on a treadmill. You get me on a treadmill. I'm pretty healthy, except for that EKG I mentioned earlier today. You get me on a treadmill, and you look at my peak exercise tolerance, you might be quite surprised at what I can and can't put up with, depending on what it is you have in store for me. So we need to bring these things.
Well, what would cause you to cancel a scheduled elective surgery?
What would cause me to? I never use the word cancel. I use the word postpone. I can't really answer that question. The bottom line is, when patients are not medically fit to have a procedure, they don't get their procedure, and it's not a particular potassium. If there's an abnormality in the potassium, for instance, which is very common, you get a 12-lead electrocardiogram. If it is unchanged, there are no T waves that are peaked, there are no U waves, there are no flattening of the Ts, they are fine for surgery. I don't care what the number is. In fact, it's not the number, it's the rate of change of that number. And so there are so many factors involved. We make tens of thousands of decisions a day, all of us. We never know which one's going to trip us up. But just be thoughtful, and to the point asked earlier, what we document is critical about the thought process. So I hope that's good enough for whoever asked the question.
Dr. Fitzgibbons, when you're doing a blind Dormier basket extraction, how do you know how far to pass the basket?
Well, you guess a little bit, but you usually meet a little resistance at the ampulla of otter. The best thing to do is to pass it in as far as you can pass it, and go past the ampulla of otter. Then you know you're in good shape, and then you inflate the basket, and you'll feel the ampulla of otter as you're pulling it back. Then you let the basket back down, pull it through, and then expand the basket again, and just go back and forth, just go back and forth with the basket, and you'll almost trap. It's very common to trap the stone.
Yeah. And which kit are you using that has the dilators for the cystic duct?
It's a Cook product.
It's a Cook product. All right. Dr. Bloomstone, I'll hopefully try to get this right. It's a little hard to read, but how do you facilitate the adequacy of fluid resuscitation and administration, and with what?
If I understand the question, standard monitors cannot be applied if one is really interested in assessing volume responsiveness dynamically during the course of a procedure. That's number one. So there are different technologies that are available to us which you can use. Dynamic indices in an operating room, all conditions met, as Dr. Sisley identified and me in my lecture, those conditions met, a dynamic index from any technology is fine. If the patient doesn't meet criteria, for instance, patient has lung injury, has poor compliance, dynamic indices don't work well in that setting, as well as many other settings, a classic delta stroke volume experiment, which these same technologies provide, would be ideal. And we do it actually all the time. So in open abdominal surgical procedures, perioperative goal-directed fluid therapy should, in my opinion, be administered.
Okay, and the last question, I think Dr. Bloom, so you made a fan. They're asking for your email address.
Depends who. I will give you my email address, whoever it is. It's jbloomstone@cox.net. There are others, but I can't check them all. jbloomstone@cox.net.
All right, those are all the questions. Does anybody else have a question? If not, well, thank you for our speakers, and thank you for everybody for coming, and enjoy the rest of the weekend.
I look forward.